At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. Thanks to Kev, and glad we worked through some of the phone issues. It is pretty amazing. I mean, you can call Singapore, talk pretty readily. So once we tried the different number, things smoothed out nicely. And it's a lot easier to call Brooklyn and reach Sid Fernando for Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And I got a couple different things for you. Okay?
Yeah, it's a very good.
Well, I do want to talk to you, obviously, about concert tour, because you're intimately involved. But I didn't get a chance with the opening, and we had the little hiccup. I didn't get a chance to address the aftermath of yesterday's conversations with Brian Kelsey from that Justice Law Center and the HPPA lawsuit challenging HISA. And I wanted to ask, your reaction, Sid, and we've talked about where this is, seemingly headed, and in all likelihood, some version of HISA will go forward. But I was really, yesterday in the aftermath, and maybe it's now, 36 hours since Monday afternoon when the legal challenge was first made public. Some of the reactions, Sid, to me are really problematic in the characterization, the choice that seems to be made, that if HBPA and horsemen are challenging the legality of HISA, that means somehow they're for cheating, and another irresponsible piece of writing that paints horsemen negatively, and I'm really amazed that is a choice being made instead of trying to understand the concerns that not just horsemen but owners and breeders should have about the way in which this thing is being implemented and potentially administered to. And it's essentially a system that's being turned over more or less to the jockey club to steer the sport without any knowledge of what that's going to entail. And for people just to say, oh, this will be great, it's unbelievable to me that nobody wants to discuss or have a useful conversation about what the parameters are going to be. It's amazing. Not to mention have a discussion about the expenses. So everybody's just ready industry-wide just to say, to have it dictated to you that, oh, okay, you're an owner, you're a breeder, you're a horse player, you're paying for this. And if you don't like it, go find, something else to bet on, which, by the way, is going to be on an increasing basis a lot easier to find other things to bet on. To me, it's disgusting. And I'll specifically, the Bill Finley TDN supposed op-ed, it was as irresponsible and nasty a concept to basically just say, well, if you're a horseman, you and you're against the, you know, this thing going forward, you must be for the cheaters. It's just a simpleton's approach.
You know, I missed the show that you had that you referenced with these guys. So I'm gonna go back and listen to it because I'm very interested in the topic. It's funny because I actually been chatting with somebody about it this morning, and I had no idea you were going to ask me about this today. But a couple of things. As far as that article by Bill, you know, I found it to be disappointing in the sense of how he painted horsemen. It was a black and white issue. One side wearing white hats, the other side black hats. You know, so I mean, it was just. I found it distasteful. However, you know, but what everybody seems to not understand is that this HISA law, this act was actually passed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, first off, the act was passed, it's law, and it's going forward. Any legal challenges to this act are not going to stop this act. That's another thing that they put into this thing. In other words, while it's being challenged, there's no slowdown in this act. This act proceeds as law. So what I don't like is when people write about this stuff, and first off, use scare tactics to say, hey, you know, this is going to stop this thing from going forward. It's going to delay the whatever, July 15 months from now, it's not delaying anything. It's an act. It's passed Congress. It was signed by President Trump when it was tacked onto that omnibus bill. And it goes forward. Now, as with any law, and I think people fail to understand a lot of, you know, if you're talking to me about rocket science or brain surgery, you know, I'm not going to put my two cents into it because I'm not an expert in it. The same thing with some of these legal issues, people that are writing about it, talking about it, fail to understand basic tenets. And one is that it's law and it goes forward. So let's leave that there for now. Second thing, any law can be challenged in court. It's the right of anybody to do it. It's a right of somebody with the state to do. I mean, that's just how our system is set up. And there's nothing wrong with that. And if you're challenging it, you know, so what? That's just how things work in this country. It's how things work under the Constitution. It's how things work in this democracy, and it's how things work in this system. So what this gets down to is this HISA was something that was lobbied heavily for by the Jockey Club over a period of years through various incarnations of this particular bill. Everybody knows about it. Horse Racing Integrity Act went through several revisions, and finally it got pushed through once Mitch McConnell, signed on to it. But as that argument was taking place, Steve, what people fail to understand is that opponents to it, which essentially is the HBPA, they opposed it not because they are for cheating, they're for drugging, or they're for everything they're being accused of. It was simply they did not want to lose the use of Lasix. And that has always been their number one point, right? Whatever side you're on, let's not conflate this with good guys and bad guys. Let's just understand that they didn't want LASIK used, taken away. And that's why they opposed this bill. Now, the bill went, it got passed. It's done. It's law, right? Now, here's where you get into some of the weeds on this thing. I've written about this thing. In fact, I wrote a piece in 2019 in February where I actually pointed out that even if this thing gets passed, it's going to have to withstand some legal challenges on constitutional grounds. Now, what I didn't like what Bill Finley said is that horsemen don't care about the Constitution. Good horsemen don't care. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, do you want to have a law that, quote unquote, is there to weed out the cheaters if it's based on an unconstitutional principle and can be struck down later? That's why there's always tests. Now, the real test in this thing, if you want to get into the weeds, is, and, you know, it's got nothing to do with drugs or anything. It simply has to do with one segment of the 10th Amendment, which has to do with what's known as the anti-commandeering principle. In other words, Congress cannot overreach and infringe upon states' rights. And that concept is, you know, what this thing is going to boil down to. And the guys that are challenging this thing, they're doing this because it gets back to, they don't like this law because they feel it's taking away the one aspect which I just referenced, LASIK. If the industry had come together and kind of hammered out something together, we wouldn't be having this infighting between groups, right? But the problem is it only comes down to LASIK. Horsemen don't want cheating. Horsemen don't want drugs. Nobody wants it in there. And by the way, when I'm speaking about it, I'm just, you know, I don't have a stake in this thing. I'm just observing and telling you that there's a heightened sense of hysteria on one side, the side that passed this legislation, that there's outrage that somebody else is going to challenge it in court. You know, this, when you get down to it, as everybody remembers, PASPA, which was the law that said that states could not have sports betting, that was struck down. And that law that was struck down, it was in 2018, I believe, Murphy versus NCAA.
Right.
That's the basis of challenging this thing, because that thing was struck down because the Supreme Court, in a 6-2 ruling, felt it was congressional overreach by telling states that they can't have, you know, legal sports betting in their states. The irony is that it was struck down, and it's more prevalent now that the Supreme Court would strike it down and uphold states' rights, because the court is stacked with conservative judges. In that ruling, the two dissenters were RBG and Sotomayor, okay? So the two liberal guys actually wanted to uphold it. It was the conservative element of it that struck it down, okay? Because the conservatives are states' rights advocates. And so under this climate, the people that passed this law, that supported this law, they're probably a little nervous that if this thing winds its way to the Supreme Court, it could be overturned on this anti-commandeering principle, part of the 10th Amendment, based on the composition of the court, which is now leans more towards upholding these types of decisions, right? So, but while it's winding its way through the court, that's separate from the law that's in place right now. That law will continue to go. So,
right.
You know, say this thing goes on for 4 years, they're still going to have the HISA in place, and that's a whole new set of issues that people are going to have to deal with, as you referenced. The funding of HISA has not been ironed out. It's basically set up for states to volunteer to fund this program to fund testing and so forth, while this private entity actually controls it. And this is where the issue of the 10th Amendment comes into play. Is it appropriate that the states have to fund something in which they have no part in regulating? Okay, the states are being asked to fund this, but they're not in charge of regulation. Normally, in a federal bill, if you do have a private entity or a federal agency that's involved in regulating an industry, it's funded federally. The difference here is that the Congress passes law, appointed a private nonprofit to oversee it, and then said, you have to get your money from the states because the federal government is not going to fund this. And this is the big issue legally that they're trying to exploit. As far as everything else goes, I think that the look, everybody wants to have as clean a game as possible. Everybody wants to, quote unquote, weed out the cheating, whatnot. That's a given, but I don't think it's fair to use a challenge to something that, in my opinion, does look unconstitutional to paint the challengers as, quote unquote, in bed with the crooks. I think that's a very fair depiction, and I think your outrage that you demonstrated before you let me talk is warranted.
I referenced it the other day. I mean, the constant carpet bombing, and it's class warfare, which we've said from the start, and it's also a war of attrition and hearts and minds. And if the Jockey Club wanted to set out at the outset of all these, of all the Lasix wars, if the objective was to belittle and diminish the importance of the trainer in the equation, well, congratulations. You've diminished the reputations of the entire training community by the constant drip, 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 and the painting of them as drug-addled, cheating scumbags. That if that's what you wanted, you've managed to do it. All you got to do is listen to the spew on Twitter, how everybody's cheating. It doesn't matter how big the barn is, doesn't matter how small, everybody suppose, and to pretend that this amorphic, unidentified entity is going to magically, completely change this equation is just a joke. It's a complete farce. But go ahead. Go ahead and do what, you know, have at it. And, you know, if it works, God bless it. That's tremendous. To me, it's come at an incredible cost that has just befouled the entire atmosphere around the sport and around horseplay. So, and frankly, I've said it before, they're not going to be happy until the industry is distilled down to a handful of meets at the elite level. They'll be thrilled to drive out the B and C tracks and to drive out the small backyard breeders and horsemen. That's their goal. That's what they want. And that's what's so bizarre. I'm about to ask you about the sales. What's so bizarre is how a certain segment, seemingly, of the breeding community is all in with it. Well, we'll see how you feel when the marketplace has shrunk down to, you know, 7,500 yearlings, you know, in 10 years. Because there's only, you know, there's only Saratoga and the Breeders' Cup and Del Mar and Keeneland. That's what they want.
Yeah, and to your point about this thing with the trainers, it was a rather head-scratching piece that Charlie Hayward wrote yesterday as well, where, you know, he's the head of the PRC's, you know, he's a jockey club member, and of course, you know, he took the stance of the jockey club in it, and pointed out, which this was a really bizarre thing for me to grasp. His article on cheating, he equated with high win percentages, and he put the win percentages of trainers in 2019 and 2020 on there on a chart. And, you know, on that chart, of course, it has the guys that were indicted, like Navarro and Service, but it also has guys like, you know, Chad Brown and stuff. And in 2020, it's got Shug McGahee. So if I were Shug McGahee and I'm reading this article, I'd be appalled to find out that you're putting down, because I have, you know, a 24% win percentage and these are too high, and Navarro and Service are on it and I'm on it. And I'm the trainer for Stu Janney, the head of the jockey club. And what are you doing? You know, and this is the kind of reactions that are taking place. And I just don't know if, you know, who comes up with this, whether they have some kind of phone conference, Zoom conference or something, and say, okay, guys, today we send out the forces to go on podcast columns and we put out these notifications and we hammer away. I mean, it seems like it's a concerted effort to talk about this and try to convince, you know, people that really don't have any idea of what this is all about, try to sway public opinion. But I find it to be kind of distasteful as in the approach that they're taking. You know, let things play out, and let's not, you know, use a broad brush to categorize everyone who's, you know, doesn't agree with your position as, you know, the enemy. I think we went through, you know, 4 years of existence where if you weren't, you know, with one group, you were against them. And, you know, it's a lot more complex than that. People, you know, have views in which they agree with some people and they disagree with others, and they disagree with the people that they agree on some issues with. It's all, you know, interrelated, and I don't think you can just use a line and define here and there. I mean, and, you know, and Twitter is a terrific vehicle, as I've told you before. I enjoyed my stay on it, but it is a big echo chamber that, you know, people are in, and a lot of times they don't have expertise in, and emotionally they react. You know, people have to get on there and say stuff, and you know, it's all part of the game too. I wouldn't get too upset about it, but it's a bigger issue, and I think the issue that you brought up about downsizing the business, making this about elite sports, it's pretty obvious that that's what people are trying to do that are controlling the business. And ultimately, you know, it's against their best interest to do that. You know, you can't just have all the top elite meets, and where are those horses supposed to drop down to once they're done? I mean, there's always useful life to horses as they come down the ladder, right? And basically, they're trying to take jobs away and package it as some, you know, some glamorous thing. But 80% of the business is, quote unquote, not glamorous. It's horsemen, people, tracks, day-to-day life. That's their lifestyle. And, you know, people need jobs and horses need jobs.
Well, we'll follow it. I just you know, I tracked certain, there's certain stories, Sid, that over the years that, you know, you get close to and that you track and you, you know, elucidate, you know, the, you know, the ins and outs of it. And one of them was, the Naira franchise. And, you know, I reported on that extensively and enthusiastically to try to have it presented factually as opposed to what was going on in the mainstream media. And and I go back to this and I use this as a example. The Albany Times Union and the New York Post and other outlets continually portrayed the New York Racing Association in a incredibly negative light. They amplified any kind of potential corruption or actual, you know, actual, you had the mutual teller indictments, you know, a handful of tellers that were, you know, involved in a scheme. They misreported the way in which the state legislature and the funding mechanism for the gaming was in place. They constantly referred to a mechanism in that legislation that provided $30 million in funding to Naira as a bailout when, in fact, it was a loan against revenues that the gaming was going to provide. And, of course, Naira paid that back. But yet, if you were to go out and do a survey right now and ask the public, particularly in New York State, and I suppose anywhere else, did Naira receive a bailout, it would be an overwhelming yes, when, in fact, it didn't. And I bring this up because when you constantly provide a big lie to pull from a current rip from today's headline example, if you perpetuate a big lie, it basically, you know, wheedles its way into people's consciousness, and no amount of factual reporting will offset that. It becomes like a public domain scenario,
that's what's
happened here with this, the way in which the horsemen have been just incredibly brutalized, and I think there's even a conscious effort in all of this to even injure their ability to negotiate the signal, which is like the one power that they have. There's an overwhelming attempt to take as much power and authority and respect away from the horsemen as possible, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's there's in society in general right now. There's not just in racing, but you know, if you go through the last 4 years, there's a willingness of the general populace to go along with authoritarianism. You know, there's some kind of feeling that we need a dear leader to take over and write everything and fix it for us. You know, that's why when you hear about racing, you know, it's frequented and frequently, you know, we need a racing czar, right? That right there is absolute clear speak that, yeah, we need somebody to take control. And in this decentralized vacuum, the Jockey Club has stepped up, and they've, through a series of things, attempted to become the face of the game. And they've done this with the Stallion Cap. They've done this with lobbying for this Integrity Act for many years until it was finally passed. Listen, when I say, when I'm speaking of them, I'm not painting them in a negative light. You know, I think smaller books are better for the industry. I think we should have integrity in testing in a clean sport. However, paramount for me as an individual is it's got to be done correctly. You know, we're a nation of laws, right? And we have rights. And so the rights of people should not be infringed upon to effectuate laws. And in this case, if somebody feels aggrieved, they have the right to challenge that. And because they're challenging that, they shouldn't be painted as part of the criminal conspiracy, quote unquote, that they're being painted as. And so, in that sense, you and I totally agree. And that's independent of this piece of law now. I was just going to say legislation. It is a law. And, you know, this is going to carry forward while these lawsuits are pending. And let's see how this law takes shape, because there's a lot to it that has not been constructed properly, at least when it was passed. Surprisingly, it was passed with many parts of it, including the parts you mentioned about funding, completely undeveloped. And so they're going to have to work on that as they set up your board structures and their organizational structures, and you know, as they go work through that, and you know, the more power to them to work on making medication uniform and weeding out people that might be cheating. But let's do this in the framework that's constitutional. And so Bill Finley, my big disappointment of hearing him say, Horsemen, something to the effect of, horsemen don't care if things are constitutional. Well, bro, yeah, you know, wake up. I mean, you know, some of us do care about that. Whether we agree with your principles or not, you can't do stuff that is unconstitutional. Well, that's the basis of our, you know, well, society.
Exactly. And then the problem is that when you establish something in this manner, it lays the groundwork to run roughshod in other areas. And that,
exactly.
That would be the, to me, the, that's what everybody should be concerned about, because, you know, first they came for the tradesmen. Sid, a couple of things. Let's touch on the early results. And they're about to get underway, day two of OBS. And thanks for that aside, Sid. I appreciate it.
No problem. After we touch on this, let's also touch on concert tour real quick.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, some early impressions. I mean, again, the top of the market, very strong yesterday. And, you know, but quite a few outs after the Breeze show, horses that you know, didn't necessarily come back from the Breeze's the right way to be, you know, then put under gavel. But what did sell sold well.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody can go and take a look at the results of this, and, you know, if you go and take a look at the results of yesterday, you had a low price of $4,000 for an outwork. You had a bunch of horses that people don't talk about that sold for less than $100,000, a bunch. But then you had nine horses that sold for $500,000 or more, and that's what everybody talks about. Now, out of those nine horses, you know, obviously that's what's exciting to talk about. I heard you mentioning Unified earlier in the show, which I listened to. And, yeah, Unified had one for $530,000. He had another one, I think, for $400,000. He's a $10,000 stallion at Lane's End by Candy Ride. He won 4 out of 7 starts. He was grade one placed in one of the New York sprints at 7 furlongs, and he ran second, but he won the grade two Peter Pan at 9 furlongs and was also, you know, basically a 6 to 9 furlong horse. He's been selling extremely well, and you mentioned that Baffert and was it Bowman?
Kenny McPeak. McPeak
had mentioned Unified. Well, if you recall last year when his first yearling sold, Steve, by far the most expensive yearling, excuse me, last year was a $450,000 Unified that the Three Amigos bought. That's Bob Baffert's three guys. You know, his main guy.
Avenger team with the SF. Yes.
you know, the Orange Silk. You know, he's a big guy in California, and then White.
Mike Pegram, Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman.
Pegram, yeah, exactly. Yeah, those guys, that's the Three Amigos. They bought that $450,000 Unified last year. And so I know Bob Baffert was impressed with them last year, too. You know, that we've had these two Unified selling pretty well, that's pretty big. I mean, among the top horses, he was practically the only unproven horse amongst them because he had the Violence at $550, he had a Munnings at $550, then that Unified at $530. But then you have horses like Warfront and some younger horses, Cairo Prince, Williams Map, who, you know, obviously had runners already. Interestingly, the two Into Mischief for $500,000 that sold went to Yuji Hashi Gawa, who's a fairly new Japanese owner, so we're going to see some high-priced Into Mischiefs in Japan next year and the year after. This year and the year after. Other than that, you know, you had some solid prices for horses, but then interesting. And Three Amigos, by the way, the same group we just referenced, they also bought a Tonalist to $300,000, which is a lot of money there for a tonalist. So, you know, it'll be interesting for people who do follow these 2-year-olds to keep an eye on some of the odd priced horses, like this tonalist for $300,000, and some of the new horses like the Unified. See how they do.
There were a number. You know, it's obviously it depends on how many hips from, you know, various, particularly the new stallions, but I did notice, you know, some nice sell-throughs. Lord Nelson, whose career was delayed by, you know, by the back injury, and so, you know, now he's getting rolling. I thought the American Freedom sold 3, 160, 80, and 45. In fact, McPeak bought one, the one for 80. Connect had a very good first day. Cupid, Klimt, Mohaman, Practical Joke. I mean, a lot of the names that we had tracked,
yeah,
through the yearling sales following through, but it should be another fun day today. I enjoyed it. I was pretty impressed. I mean, the numbers got posted early and often, you know, with 500, 550 being the benchmark. I'm looking forward to talking maybe to Kip Elser tomorrow afterward. Right now, Kip is, you know, sitting with the session and sale topper, the Violence colt that sold early yesterday, hip 48. So along with Eddie Woods,
yeah.
And, you know, got the money.
I thought that was kind of interesting about Kip, because Kip had for a long time been not breeding these horses and selling them, you know, off slow works or
the gallops.
Gallops, and then he comes back with a 9-4 work and the sales topper.
Well, and you know, he's got that client. He's got the one client that believes in the Gallup concept.
Right.
And they're going to, you know, I think they're continuing. This is, you know, this was another breeder client of Kip's, with this violence.
Kip's a good guy. And
yes, he is. Does a great job. Great, great job. All right. Let's turn to the other topic at hand, and of course, we'll look at the Louisiana Derby field with you in a second. But concert tour, Sid, and I thought Rosario's ride, a big part of the success here, was aggressive and basically put Caddo River on the defensive and wins. And it's a unique situation for the West to have bred this horse that they kept, and to have bred Life Is Good, who they sold.
It is, and both these horses, as our company Twitter account Sirewatch put out the other day, were from the time they were weaned, were in the same paddock together, until Life Is Good was sold. Both real nice colts, according to Des Ryan of Delridge Farm, where the West keep their marriage. What's interesting is, you know, since, you know, we do the matings for the West, and, you know, we're happy to be a part of the team, which is a great team. Mr. West is, you know, quite involved. In fact, that year he had sent an email to us saying he wanted to use Into Mischief, which he hadn't been using before. Ben Glass, his racing manager, Des Ryan at Del Ridge, part of the team. Yeah, he's got Doc, he's got Jeff has retired, but they're using Georgie down at the Nelson Jones Training Center in Florida, just to give a shout out to their whole team. And like I said, we're just happy to be a part of the team. But what happened was, Mr. West looks for, Gary and Mary West look for, you know, classic types of horses, and even though he wanted to use Into Mischief, they felt that he might be more sprinter miler, and they're planning on selling horses down the road, because they've got Game Winner, Maximum Security, a West Coast, and the aforementioned American Freedom that you pointed out, that they're supporting with mares, and they're going to have to sell. So they wanted to sell, you know, some good colts to let people know that they're going to be, they're not, you know, culling. They're actually going to put horses out there that are some of their best and highly rated yearlings. And so they sold that colt, Life Is Good. They kept this colt. You know, when you look at this colt, Street Sense, from a Tappet mare, just to give you some background in it, the pedigree isn't that particularly that strong. If you had sold this colt as a yearling, he would have been what you'd call a yearling with two blank dams, meaning there was no black type under purse strings, the dam, and there was no black type under the second dam, My Red Porsche. So a yearling like that in the sale with two blank dams gets punished commercially. Of course, this colt wasn't meant for the sales ring, but I just bring that out to point out that the only black type you really get is champion two-year-old, the Tappet champion two-year-old filly, Stardom Bound, which is indented once under the third dam. So why did we use Street Sense for this mare? Well, there were a couple of things. The sire, Street Cly, had done really well with AP Indy. So that cross, that nick of Street Cry with AP Indy is really, you know, quite good. And we just forecasted that his son, Street Sense would follow the same path with AP Indy Line Stallions. As a point of reference, you'll note that when we had done the mating for Maximum Security, it's bred exactly the same way. Maximum Security is by a Son of Street Cry. That's New Year's Day that the West had raced with Baffert and won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So New Year's Day, like Street Sense, is a Son of Street Cry. Now, Maximum Security is out of a mare who's by Anna Sheed, a son of AP Indy. So that cross had already worked here for the West, you know, on something we'd been following. And so Concert Tour is bred very similarly on that cross. Street Sense out of a Tappet mare who's by Pulpit by AP Indy. Now, that's just the sire line cross, or the Nick, as we like to talk about, right? But what I'm really, proud about with this mating, and Roger Lyons really needs to get a lot of credit on this as well, is, as you know, Steve, we have a Bubba compatibility analysis with what's called the Lyons score. Just to break it down real quickly, the Lyons score, which goes from -2 at the worst to +2, so it goes -2, -1, 0, +1, +2. The +2 is the best mating, and this mating with Street Sense was a +2. And Gary West and Ben Glass, you know, they're sophisticated people. They look at the Nick rating. That's one component. They look at the line score. They look at all that on paper before they actually inspect the horses, right? So how do you get a +2 on a line score? Well, the line score basically takes that stallion Street Sense. He looks at all the mares he's ever been bred to that have superior horses running. And this computer program looks at Street Sense with all these ancestors, and then you look at Purse Strings, the dam of Concert Tour, and Street Sense, and the computer program looks at Street Sense, and then it looks at all the ancestors in the pedigree of Purse Strings, and sees if Street Sense has had success with all the background ancestors. Yet another tool that we use. And this particular mating, like I said, scored +2, the highest we have. It was an excellent mating. And so Mr. West and Ben Glass decided to follow through on it. And we're, you know, like I said, we're thrilled that this colt came about. Now, once Bob Baffert had these colts, and, you know, and by chance, the Avengers, the Windstar Group and China Horse Club sent Life is Good to Baffert. And, of course, the rest have horses with Baffert. So once I started hearing about these colts, I really started to check in with Bob to find out how they were progressing for our own personal, you know, interest. And what I found from Bob early on was that he felt very little separating Life is Good from Concert Tour. And so when Life is Good started winning big, I felt really confident about Concert Tour, just from his input, too. He really thought very highly of this colt. And what he, and you know, when he won the second race, you know, Mr. West was really not that impressed. And I had to tell him, I said, Gary, I said, you know, Bob is sprinting. Bob doesn't think this colt is a sprinter, but he's using these two sprints to go to Oaklawn, and, you know, he's still winning against sprinters, right? So I think that made Gary feel better. And Gary, after he won the last race, said, well, you might be right. Feel better about the colt. So I knew that Bob really did have a very high opinion of this colt Concert Tour. And particularly, Bob told me, as the distance is lengthened. So you know, that's something exciting to look at. It gets a lot of that stamina, obviously, from the Streets and Street Cry sire line. Cap it will give you a big dollop of stamina because he had three Belmont Stakes winners, but he's also got speed too, and it's a great combination, a harmonious combination in this pedigree of speed and stamina, and that's what you really need for a classic colt. You can't go too high on stamina because you may end up being too much of a plodder. You can't go too high on speed, which is what Gary West thought Life is Good has, okay? Now, you can have a really good horse, though, that, you know, is so dominant, he'll dominate his contemporaries, even if he's a speed horse. But at any rate, I think these two colts are much closer in ability than their speed figures indicate.
Well, if that... you know, everybody pretty much is, you know, anointed Life is Good as, you know, as if he gets there and if he's sound, if he's healthy, he's way the horse to beat.
We're looking at a mile and a 16th races, and these big
figures
are based at a mile and a 16th. They changed at a mile and a quarter.
No doubt. And in fact, you know, it's funny, Andy Serling and I, yesterday afternoon, Andy and I were kicking around and we were going over some of this, and actually Louisiana Derby came up too. And, mm-hmm. you know, one thing that I've kind of learned over the years is how this is, you know, starting Saturday, I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road. And you know, we are basing all these discussions for the most part. I mean, there are the isolated mile and an eighth maiden races and mile and an eighth allowance races and, you know, so forth. But, you know, we're generally basing all of our speculation on Derby on, you know, horses that haven't gone past that mile and a 16th. And it's just always valuable to remember that, you know, a sprinter, a horse that long-term in their career and their aptitudes is going to be better off one turning and maybe up to a mile at one turn and probably even less. They can on precocity, they can get that mile and a 16th. Not so simple to get the mile in the eighth, and that's where, you know, the dividing line is. And so we're going to see horses that people, you know, were dismissive of after the first round of preps, the middle round of preps, that, you know, then take the next step forward. That's what's so exciting about a horse like Greatest Honor is, you know, from day one, Shug never expected the horse to be successful going short. So if you get a horse like that, that's doing it at shorter distances, you get excited because you think, well, when we get to a mile and an eighth and beyond, he's going to really flex his muscles.
That's right. Belmont Stakes winner. I told you that over and over again.
Well, don't tell Shug. Don't tell Shug or Don Adam, because they're hoping they can win a Derby yet.
Yeah, that's right. I did want to say you've gone over American horses in the UAE Derby. And there's another American horse, although, and he'll be coming back here, and that's Spike Per Comet. And that's Chuck Fipke's horse that's trained by Doug Watson. He's going.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Well. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So he's going. And a bit of news as well. Chuck called me yesterday to tell me that that Title Ready will be ridden in the Dubai World Cup. Dubai World Cup by Ryan Moore.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. I forgot about Title Ready. I've got this little tiny. the thing is, it's like a pocket sized version. So the eyes were straining. I gotta print out a better working list. For the likelies. Well, Sid, before we go, a quick glance ahead. You got a minute to look at Louisiana?
Yeah, I think that Hot Rod Charlie, you know, is coming up to this race as a potential horse. I think he, you know, he made that first start that was a blanket finish, a really good race for him. And I think he's a horse that I'm looking at to appreciate the extra distance, too.
Well, and of course, you know, one thing that is a wrinkle, and in fact, Tom Amos kind of hinted at this on Monday, you know, the change in the configuration and the distances and how, you know, the Louisiana Derby lead up and the Louisiana Derby, for those that forget, it's a mile and 3/16. It's the Preakness
right.
distance.
Yeah.
So we're going to get an acid test in here, and Midnight Bourbon back, the Tisnow Colt for Steve Asmussen and Ron Winchell, you know, by Tappet out of the Malibu Moon Mare. You've got, who else might stand to benefit? Proxy.
Midnight Bourbon. Isn't Midnight Bourbon by Tisnow?
Tisnow. What'd I say? I said
yeah.
Tappet. Tisnow yeah. out of the Malibu right. Moon Mare. The right. Tappet is a proxy, of course, for Godolphin
yeah.
Out of Panty Raid. Mandaloon.
And Godolphin's the hottest barn in the country.
In the world. Well, don't shortchange him.
That's right.
It's crazy. I mean, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, Mandaloon, the Judmon homebred. Coming out of the Risen Star win, Into Mischief out of an Empire Maker mare, out of Brooch.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
there's plenty in here for that. You know, the horse, though, that the horse that's going to be a square price, and I think people may have forgotten a little bit about, was that Run Classic that was so impressive, breaking the maiden on the Risen Star undercard. This is the Run Happy out of the Chatain mare.
Mm-hmm.
Pledge pin. Is that a pledge
yeah.
pin on your uniform? my favorite. What kind of fraternity would pledge a man like you? Delta, sir. What a flounder. Sid?
Well, we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, that's for sure. This was
as usual, you dragged me into something.
That's it. Just when you thought you were safe, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. Yeah. Well, I've already seen a couple of text people that appreciated your thoughts and on the way you presented them, and so I hope that's the case. We're trying to, you know. Trying to explain why there's other viewpoints. So,
yeah,
Sid, and good luck this all weekend.
Right,
we'll talk.
Yeah,
we'll talk next Wednesday. All right.
Yeah, you got it, bro. I'll talk. To
I you love later. It, Sid Fernando. Everybody, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale and the babies. They're dropping lots of cute foal pictures. Did you see that? Who was it? Yesterday, I couldn't help but comment on one photo. There was a the sire got his first baby. Shagaf got his first baby, and it's an Indiana bred. And I don't know if you saw the picture, but the I think it's a colt. Throwing some side eye up at the camera, the colt, it just looked like it had a real attitude. It made me laugh. I kind of burst out laughing when I came across it. It's on my timeline. I retweeted it. I said, whoa. I said, there's a foal with some attitude. We're about 10 minutes in, a little bit more, and got about 45 minutes or so to fill out. I've got to get to Craig Griffin. We'll do a quick Sam Houston because they're hitting again with another round of purse increases. So and we didn't get a chance to talk last week to Craig, so we'll catch up with Craig. I want to get to Popo as well, and we'll do a little recap. Form2win.com, and you may have seen Popo tweeted and I retweeted it. The two free races are now in the power of your hand. So if you've downloaded, I mean, start with that. Download Form to Win, and then you'll be able to start playing two races a day and understanding and, you know, start playing with the settings and start to understand it. We want everybody to be comfortable with it before you subscribe. It's only $20 a month, but still want you to you know, understand what's in your hand, what you're dealing with. Back after this, hour three. I'm gonna go check on the. Better go. I don't have to check on it. I can smell that the corned beef is steeping. I used beer. I used an IPA as the braising liquid. You can, you know, doesn't matter really, but the beer gives it a little, you know, a little added zets. All I knew is it had to be ready for when Tina got home. That's that was the priority. I hope also everybody. Each day I'll send out a link to the contest tourney challenge. I'm sorry I couldn't just auto renew everybody. I don't know if I hit a setting or wrong or something, but I couldn't just automatically renew everybody. So you got to re-up, all right? And I'll put the link out a few times between now and Friday. And my Colgate Red Raiders are, I'm not supposed to call them Red Raiders anymore. The Maroon, let's call them the Maroon. The Maroon, a somewhat fashionable selection, it seems, right? Game's going to be crazily entertaining. It's got the highest over-under of any of the first-round games. It should be just a track meet up and down with Arkansas. So, looking forward to it. Right if I get off the air, I'll have just enough time to settle in. 12:45 on Friday. Back after this, Chris Griffin in the grandstand. Sam Houston Race Park. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Sirius XM Sports presents